sains, deduktif, aktivis, energi, artis, disco, kopi, astronot, akses, bisnis, radio kunci.
I'm Lisa Sinkman. I'm a programmer here at the Research Center for Antiquarian Culture in the Tropical Museum. And this is the final day of the Kunchi residency. Together with Sana, Janini, and Dad, we invited Kunchi to be researchers in residence for 6 weeks at the Tropical Museum and to reinterpret, recontextualize our archives and collections from contemporary, global, and artistic positions. We're happy to have this final concluding event with them today, where they can share the outcomes of their artistic research together with you and bring it into conversation. So that's what we're looking forward to today. Practically, we will start with a live radio show, which will take until 12. Then there will be a 1 hour break during which you can have lunch or just have a look around in the museum and see the exhibitions. And we'll start again at 1 and with several speakers, lectures, panel discussions, and you can all take part in that. And it will be until 4:30. So now I'd like to welcome Sana Giannini, the curator of this project, to give a short introduction. Thank you. But first.
Okay, sorry for the technicalities because we are going live now as we speak. VK is still trying to connect to the internet.
Yeah, sorry, we had like an internet problem. It seems the connection is not working at the moment, so we are trying to fix it. And maybe meanwhile I can introduce the project. So yeah, hello everyone, thanks for being here. I'm Sara Giannini, and Kunchi's residency program here at the Tropical Museum is the second chapter of a curatorial and research platform that I initiated 1 year ago in collaboration with TAC. This platform is called Heterotropics, and I've been trying to kind of untangle and understand what is the affection of these traces in the present. And so, as I was saying, Kunchi's residency is the second chapter of Heterotropics. The project is called Resound, Revision, Recollection, Sensing Through Colonial Archives. Kunchi has been here for 6 weeks almost to mainly research the permanent exhibition that the Tropical Museum has about Dutch East Indies and also the related archives. I don't know if you're familiar with Kunchi's practice. I've been like following them for a few years now. I think it's very interesting how they blend artistic categories. So they are like kind of inhabit this very fluid space in between art production and research and critical studies, and they're continuing like redefining what these disciplines are without ever like coming to a final conclusion. And I think their approach is also very much kind of resonates with my own approach with Heterotropics, which is also a way for me to kind of a bit interfere with the kind of taxonomy of museums, collections, the urban structure of the city, but also to kind of, is an attempt to try also different alternative ways to produce, present, and do art together that are a bit deviating from the usual kind of economy of exhibiting and gazing that I also think is a legacy of colonialism. And during their residency, different Kunchi members were here, and they've been also using sound, the voice, and their radio platform, Radio Kunchi, which we hope we can use today too, to also approach the collection and the exhibitions here at the Tropical Museum. The sound also enabled them to connect the objects that are in the museum to to the outside world, so to other voices, to other stories, to other researches, as a way also to maybe disclose more kind of micro histories that might be connected to the objects that are here stored in this place. Also, as a kind of a, as a conclusion of their residency project, next to this symposium, Kunci has created a special audio guide for the Dutch East Indies exhibition, which again uses the sound and the voice as its main kind of medium. And so today we are launching the audio guide. Maybe there will be also like a preview of the audio guide later. And so I would like just to thank now the Research Center for Material Culture, Wayne Modest and Lisa Zwalling for having believed in the project, having supported us and hosted us during this time. I would like to thank TAC also for their advice in the production of this project, the Tropping Museum and the curator of InvestorCamp for his expertise and his guidance. And last but not least, I would like to thank Kunci for their engagement and commitment to this project, for being here. And thanks, everybody, for being here today. I hope the radio is working now, and I would like to give the mic to Ferdi, who will speak more about Kunci and the project. Thank you.
Astronaut, axis, disease, radio, Kunci.
Hello to our listeners at the radio, Kunci, and also to our audience who are here this morning at the Tropen Museum. Today, we will start with a symposium on tropical, entitled Tropical Dissonance, Decolonizing Knowledge Through Ethnographic Archives. Basically, this whole event will be live streamed throughout the day for more or less another 3 or 4 hours. And as a start to open the symposium, we would like to invite also Wayne Modest from the research of Research Center for Material Culture. Wayne, where are you? My name is Ferdi. By the way, I'm sorry to introduce myself. And here, apart from Wayne and me, there's also two other Kunci members, Vicky Daulay and Murai Yastuti, who kind of also will join the conversation. And to give you a kind of description or like about our experience in the past 6 weeks doing a residency at the Tropen Museum as part of the Heterotropics project, which is curated by Sarah Giannini and Tuck. We made quite a few actually podcasts and also live streamings. Not only in the city, in different places in the city, but also from inside the museum itself. And then we interview researchers, artists, curators who are mainly working with archive, ethnographic archive or colonial archive that is kept as part of the archive of the museum. We are now here today, and you can try to look at the different podcasts and recordings in our website, also at radio.kunci.org.id. But maybe we can start also with Nuning, who, because it was Vicky and Nuning who stays here longer. For I'm only joining here like coming and going for the past 6 weeks with Vicky. Rooney has been the one who has been engaging with this museum as well as the different people.
I must thank Wayne first for providing his time, despite this very busy time, to be interviewed by us here today. Just would like to extend what Ferdi said earlier about the audio guide that we created. I will explain it later, but indeed we are finally we are trying to basically what we are doing here is to think about the collection of this museum, especially the Netherlands is in this collection that is exhibited also on the same floor here, through sound. So I'm going to connect it to the research center that Wayne is heading the research center. I mean, based on your experience, when what does it mean to make materiality center stage? Especially, how would it help to inform the meaning of being a museum and a cultural institution in the Netherlands today?
Thank you. First of all, I should also do the say thanks. Thanks to Sarah. Thanks to Kunchi for being here. And Sarah provided us with an opportunity to engage with Kunchi, even though I was in Indonesia several years ago and met with Kunchi and hoped that we would have been able to bring them here to work critically with us. What does it mean to make material culture, materiality center stage? For us, that's what museums do in a way. I mean, museums, in a way, mobilize a collection to be able to speak about particular histories, particular moments of contact or encounters, mm-hmm. particular violences, and we mobilize collections to be able to do that differently from other institutions. So for us, it is the research center, but also the museum as a whole sees the collection as a starting point to engage with what does it mean to live, to create, to be creative beings in the world. So it is a starting point for thinking of that. And when we say materiality, we use it broader than the word material itself, because many people use materiality to mean the thingness of the thing. But when we say materiality, we are also engaged in more also the social meanings they create, but also the social worlds in which they are embedded. And so in doing that, materiality also means the kinds of labor, the kinds of that created these objects, the kinds of ideas behind them, but also the kinds of histories of which they come and how that translates to the present. So for us, that is what it means to think materially.
Yeah, thank you. Because also it's part of our, as Nuni told you, we made this audio guide, right? And actually, funny, because the way we approach it is actually to look at the immaterial parts of, like, okay, we have all these objects here, but then what is being hidden or unsaid or maybe concealed within. And we try to go through that as well. But do you think also this is something that the research culture looks at, or is it something that...
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that there is a, within how we understand heritage, and museums are often embedded in this idea of what is heritage, what is protected for the future. There is this distinction made between what is material and what is immaterial, what is tangible and what is intangible, and that has its structure within global governance frameworks, such as, for example, within ICOM, within UNESCO. There is a framework for that. For us, however, I mean, and it is true, these distinctions are made. Very often when you see an exhibition, what you see is that thing itself. But as a museum, we don't necessarily make, I don't think the research center proposes that, and this is what our museum does. We don't make that distinction because religion exists in and outside of objects. There is a material to it. The stories of the objects getting here, their trajectories, that is also a part of the immaterial side of it. So I would say to you that it is not only those stories that are elided or made silent that are important, but there are other economies that need to be attended to in these things as well. For example, one of the projects we do know is called on materials themselves, on silver, gold, aluminum, whatever. And the reasons for doing that was also to ask the question, how is silver mined? Who mines silver? For whom is it mined? Those kind of questions need to be asked as well, because you don't necessarily always see those when you see them in the displays.
I'm curious about what do you think about the, you know, the idea of archive and heritage? It might be odd because people also tend to see those categories as very freaky too, but my sense is that these two things might evoke, I don't know, like maybe certain vocabularies mm-hmm. that might provide also insights to understand the meaning of, you know, something that you already said earlier, like being important, also valuable and fragile and precarious.
Mm. Yeah, if I understand your question correctly, archives, heritage, these terms emerge and are the terms under which many of these collections are understood. That is true. There is a vocabulary that we use to talk about them. One of the things that we did in a conference recently was just to look at the relationship between time and the museum, because mm-hmm. museums have temporary exhibitions and permanent exhibitions. All of us have museums have a particular kind of vocabulary around which it works. And that vocabulary is often emerging from the disciplines, mm-hmm. whether or not it is archival studies, museum studies, the professionalization of the museum. So yes, there is a vocabulary with which we teach the museum to the world, or not even teach, but how we represent it. Yes, that is true.
Mm-hmm. In terms of this vocabulary, actually, I mean, reflecting with our own experience here.
Yeah, the door, yeah.
In the past 6 weeks, it's exactly, I mean, we actually, one of our biggest challenges is actually to kind of navigate through this vocabulary. And then, because not only like problems of languages, but also like, because we don't speak Dutch, apparently. But even the term archives itself, we understand it quite differently with how some of the curators in the museum understood archive. We could connect at many moments, but there are also some disconnections. And I don't know, is it something that you see, like, yeah, it's just a common thing that is happening actually if you talk about this kind of institution, or is it something that looking at past experiences working with artists, working with researchers who are not necessarily like exposed to this kind of language of this vocabulary, how do you see it?
Well, you would have to explain a little bit more where your the dissonance between yourself and the curator was in terms of the archive. But you know, it's funny. I have a conversation very often with scholars who write and write in jargon, and many people say that they're writing in an academic jargon, and you learn after a while that there is also a museum jargon. There is a way of narrating the museum space. That can be very, very difficult to enter. That is without question. What we try to do, and with our program in the Research Center for Material Culture, we try to ensure as well, for example, recently, we are collaborative with the University of Amsterdam and the Free University for Curators in Training program. And one of the questions that came up recently was whether or not international students could join the program. Mm. If international students join the program, how do they access the archive? And what is this archive that they'll access? Can they read Dutch? Can they read the language? So there is always that. And the question for the Research Center is how do we provide that space, that of entry, where it becomes accessible? That's not always as easy, but that is one of the things that we try to do, to provide an accessible space where the collections can be understood, critiqued, or thought of anew. So that is one of the things. I would say to you, though, that one of the things that is interesting is that the word archive has come to mean so much recently that everybody uses it. One could talk about the archive fever of Derrida, but everybody uses it so for everything. Mm-hmm. And one has to be, not necessarily, I'm not one to be believing the disciplinarily or the nomenclature purity. But I also am interested in us thinking what criticality is brought to bear when one uses that word archive. What is it that we're trying to suggest? So I would love to know what difficulties you had with the curator, so that I can talk more about it.
No, it's not, because like for us, it's like these moments of like discomfort, or it's not something that is necessarily bad. Right. Like it's not we are reporting back to you. Hey, no, it's just that it's interesting in itself, the these encounters, and then it made us, for instance, imagine like, okay, if it's that difficult for us who well educated in terms of speaking or trying to speak with or through the language of the museum, then I would like, how do you then speak to a larger audience? Like, how do you, like, that's our kind of like thinking, like, so also make us think in terms of what is our role here, in terms of are we kind of like translators then, who try to kind of connect again this moments of miscommunication, say, or communication, but also, which is not true, because also the museum is also doing that through its program.
I see the museum as a complex organism, a complex technology, and a part of that complex technology is to try and be a space, what I always say, which is not often always true for many people, a space that can translate some of the dense, difficult, theoretically challenging concepts around some of the histories that we deal with to a broader audience. So as a technology, and that is in the professionalization of the museum, as a technology, the idea is that the exhibition itself is supposed to be a space of some kind of, whether it is legibility or some affective space that engages with the visitor for them to do further work. But the translation in between that curatorial or that research to the visitor is supposed to be in that technology of translation, in a way that the exhibition does. That is the intention. Now, it is true to say that is not always the case. That is what we hope, but that is not always the case. And the question is, how do you reach that space? I gave a talk some time ago where we were discussing the fact that ethnographic museums were intended, or this is my idea anyway, were intended as spaces of legibility. That one could come to these institutions and one is supposed to be able to understand the cultures which the objects represent. That's how it has been posited, a space for legibility of the others. But when I spoke about that, I also asked the question, is that even possible? Is it possible to make legible others? And one should probably even think of moving away from that idea as that space of legibility for others, to be a space of provocation, to be a space of questioning, to be all sorts of other things rather than the legibility in which we think. You asked what was your role. I would hope that your role was to disturb us. That is that our research fellowship is intended to try and disturb the way we work and think about things. So that's the idea.
I think the idea that to create audio guide is partly to do that. I mean, to disturb the no, logic of
no, I'm worried.
Order.
We
try to. So that's why if you see the paper that we made the description of audio guide, we said outside and within, because that's like the strategy that we are using by being here. We use the voice as a kind of metaphor, not necessarily to make it emerge or make it loud, but also to acknowledge that voice is also something that can be easily suppressed or lost, or you know, like hidden. And we try to think of archives also through maybe through the history of migration that we have. We try to connect to share the historical trajectories with all the things that we are seeing here. So this audio guide is partly our way to say what this thing enable us to speak what, and also how we react to the language that used by the museum also. And yeah, because we try to, because for us, while we are making this, I think the word decolonize, or you know, the desire to be represented might be too big for us. You know, like that, because that might not be something that is entirely fit for us. Because
we tend to avoid it.
Yeah, because for so long we are dealing with different types of keywords that have long been defined our, for instance, our way of thinking and seeing things. So it is with this kind of thinking actually we create this audio guide, thinking through limitation, for instance. Like the kind of limitations that Verdi said, limitation of not being able to totally understand what this is, even though this is something that you know come from our land, and yeah.
Well, I mean the two things, if I may just quickly respond. It was a lecture recently. It was actually in Berlin. I don't know if you saw him in Berlin. And I keep saying this and I should stop. But anyway, where Arjuna Padurai tried to connect the fate, the genealogies of ethnographic collections with the fate and genealogies of refugees. And one of the things that he was to propose in that interview, and I have the text from it, is simply that one of the things that we do with collections, which is what you're talking about very often, is that with collection one sees their genealogy too little, that one sees not necessarily the trajectories which they have taken to be here, but rather one focuses either on the place from where they come or on them as the final product. And he speaks of the question of the accidental migrant, where what he's interested in trying to do is to suggest that if one were to account for those genealogies more, then one can uncover more deeply the relationships, whether of inequality, of violence, of exchange, of whatever, that animate those histories. So in a way, I understand what you mean about being attendant to the migratory histories of these things, to be able to think about what that might mean. And the second point that you made, which I find interesting, is where you said that you that perhaps that there is a burden, and perhaps we place that burden on you, a burden for you to understand the things, right? That you might not necessarily understand, even though it comes from you, from your land, as you put it. And perhaps that is so. There is a way in which we also suggest that you should know more because it comes from where you come from, a shared genealogy in some way, a shared originary formation. But you could also say that that was not the intention for you to be here, actually. The intention is not to burden you with being Indonesian because the objects are Indonesian. The intention was to be able to see what kinds of criticality you bring to these objects, that they are here, what kind of relationships that brings up, what kind of difficult questions does it emerges out of it, because we believe is that if one attends to those difficult questions, then one can have a better modality of trying to represent or present these objects. So it is not to burden you with forcing you into Indonesian-ness just to be able to talk about the collections. That was not the intention.
Come on.
No, because also, I think when... This is also still a kind of like very raw ideas that encounter here, is that actually we do come with that intention or with that aspiration of trying to, okay, what can we, like, we did some research towards that direction, talking about ethical policy, talking about history of education, and so on and so forth, which is like more content-wise. But this is actually what I'm trying to say by telling that the kind of difficulty that we experience here in terms of like navigating the collection and the museum are actually also kind of like sustained by meaning that it's so instead of engaging with the the object themselves, for instance, we tend to look at the glass cases, look at the broken sound fragment in the collections. And it's more like an ethnography of museum at the end of the day, but also in trying to find the connections. Speaking of materiality, talking about this thing that institutionalized the objects and the object, and kind of like the framing of the objects and the object, and trying to find the connection and disconnection as well. And then that's how we think that we could contribute or intervene or what have you. Like, for instance, we come up with new keywords like reveries, like reveries, like refractions and like broken sound. Like, how do we as researchers, but also how do we as imagining ourselves as a public, as a visitor to the museum, trying to or looking at the like small scribbles in one of the book that maybe, I don't know, you know that already, there's a footprint of a dog, which is like we never really know what it like where it's come from, but trying to understand how that got into the floor onto the floor of the museum. Right?
Just to add something, so at the audio guide, we use the corner where this museum shows the installation of missionary at the Papua as the end of the audio guide, also to refer to that is also the question it's very big question for us, Papua. So, and we intentionally make it as the final point of this audio guide to to reflect to that, because talking about distance, there's always a big distance for us, especially who live in Java with people who live in Papua. So there are so many things that like replicated up until today, which makes us feel that actually the distance between us and the Netherlands feels like much closer than us with the Papua. Because there is the territory that there are so many things that we don't know yet.
The thing is that you're inspiring me to turn the space around. So now I'm trying to prevent myself from starting to interview you. But I want to suggest two things. One of the things that I'm interested in, and this was earlier I was interested in it, and you mentioned it a few times, is what is the vocabulary with which we mobilize today to speak, and to speak about the colonial, but also to speak. It is my ongoing contention that in a way, one of the things we do is that we repackage words, we try to rethink words, but we don't really have the vocabulary yet to necessarily understand the moment that we're in. Somebody who fascinates me, her work, because she tries to mobilize a new vocabulary, is Ann Stola, and her recent use. I mean, I see the words desire, and so as you've used them, emerging from her work, but also her just trying to think recently about the questions of durabilities and duress in her last book. One of the things that you did when I was when I met with you in Jogja was, I don't know if this is true, I don't know if my memory served me wrong, but you were talking about a project that you were doing on authenticity.
Yes.
And you had this concept called Q value, right? Q1, Q2, Q3, what was it?
Oh yeah, KW.
Yeah, value. Yes. And the KW value, just to say, is a value of quality removed from the original. So whereas we would think of something as being non-authentic, the idea of a KW value is that you can have a Louis Vuitton that is
KW1,
KW2, KW3,
yes.
Which meant that, and what that did for me was to say that the burden for authenticity that we have in this kind of museum becomes somewhat questionable when one starts to mobilize an idea of the KW value. Because even if, of course, KW talk about how far from the original it was, but it provides us with another kind of framework, another language, another way of seeing what this might mean in our kind of museum. And I was just thinking, okay, in the museum, we could also try and think about what KW values can we assign to objects? You know, is that possible? Which would move us a little bit away from the authenticity question as we use it here. If that is the case, then one of the expectations that I have, and why I enjoy or think that it's important in our engagement, is because you might be able to help us with, and this is not us trying to appropriate from you again, of course, there's a danger in that, but you might be able to trouble the ways in which we understand by offering another kind of vocabulary, another kind of lens, another kind of even mobilizing or thinking about the collections. So in everything that I've seen here, the tropical dissonances, the decolonized, and I tend to also question the idea of decolonized, not necessarily because I don't think that it is not fruitful, but rather I ask the question, does it have the utility that we think it will have, or will it do anything different from diversity? Because basically I think diversity hasn't worked because we don't want it to. But I didn't say that, sorry. So decolonization might not work. So it is exactly in that vocabulary. How can we develop a new kind of vocabulary to be able to describe the current moment that we're in, but also to be able to do that work of changing institutions like ours? So that's one thing. And my question to you, sorry to turn the script around, is what then would you like to see us represent differently? If you say that I like the idea that you are probably much closer to us here, which in my own phrase, that's a particular relationship in the colonial, than with Papua. What? How would we represent that differently in the museum? What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, thank you for bringing this up. Coming back to the KW as a framing, actually, is it what we, I don't know how to describe it without sounding too generalizing, but is exactly this tension, like playing with this tension in relation to objects and materiality and knowledge and master narratives and like, museum as a container of knowledge, as transmission, as a transmitter of knowledge, but the objects themselves as holder of truth, is exactly that we're trying to. Yeah, maybe decolonize is not the term, but in trying to put it in context again, in like recontextualize it in a sense that what does it mean now to have a colonial museum, or what does it mean now to have a museum in a context where geopolitically, globally, everything kind of like more and more enmeshed, let's say, or more problematic. But and to at the same time also trying to dethrone this master narrative, including the language itself, in the way we describe it, like decolonization, queering, gendering. For us, it's more about being able to be in a certain on a certain limit, but also not. There's no new languages. We can only work with the existing languages, but then to continue pushing it away from certain centers, and then that's how we see our practice, for instance. And yeah, criticality maybe is the only safe word that we have now.
So maybe to put it in a more practical sense here, talking about appropriation and KW or KW, we are here, we are using Sulastri's body, if you remember the mannequin at the education center section, and use it as a means that we can use to travel through history tunnel, and then to pose questions, not only maybe Sulastri's questions towards all the things that CA's position with in this room, but also our own questions. So with the Papua, for instance, I think the key is for us to make all the questions emerge, all the contradiction also emerge, the question about survivor, and also, you know, the victim is
evidence
emerge. So for instance, we acknowledge that we are not totally satisfied with the, you know, essentializing case towards Papua, and we do want to have, for instance, I don't know, like contemporary Papuan visual arts, or maybe contemporary
literature
from Papua, things that we also very rarely obtain, even when we are in Indonesia. But at the same time, we also have to be very, very careful not to let that be commodified, you know, again. So I think that's the least maybe that we can do. I think maybe kita can say.
Maybe because we don't agree with that much. Okay. You have a last. I want to grab it and ask questions. Do you have any questions?
Well, I just want to add something with what you just said.
maybe what in terms of language, what we expected, maybe sort of the process when the language is not yet is not fully shaped. So it's kind of the idea of in between creation of the language itself. When, let's say, for us, like we are not so close to the Papuan people, but at the same time we also feel like we're much closer to the Netherlands.
Mm.
And having said that, is maybe it would be much more enlightening to seek for the way of making this active process of making language.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that I understand what you mean about, you know, there is no new language, and so one of the you said earlier that what you're working with is a set of concepts, and so decolonize become a conceptual understanding, and we need to fill that in. For me, the importance, and you ask, what does it mean to have a museum like this in the moment? That's a massive question. It's a massive question also because that has been the question that animated these kinds of museums for the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
They've been asking that question. I can't tell you that I have a simple solution. I would, however, say that if these institutions have been embedded in a certain kind of global economy for the last 150 years, and a kind of economy which a global set of relations for that period which emerges out of colonial entanglement, colonial violence, all of that, then I think that the urgency of this kind of institution is also to attend to that genealogy. So that's one part of it, and to make that clear, to make that to be able to try to show that in a way, so that we understand how we have come to this present. And I think that is a part of it. And to be honest with you, I don't know that we can do that in...
Mm.
We are able to do that perfectly. That won't happen. But it behooves us, it is important for us to be able to try, to try and show these genealogies, show these interactions. And I think that is a necessary act. In another side to it, though, because we have these ghosts that are buzzing, and we need to do something with those. In another side to it, though, I think that the collections that we have, and I am committed to this act, committed to that, is that what I feel about a certain redressing history, and that redressive historical process is one that basically tries to confront some of the ways in which we have represented in the past, and to try and think about a kind of unrepresentation, a kind of negative representation, or a work towards that. So I think that that's also an urgency. But in a way, I think that our museum, because of its implicatedness in all of this, also has a work to do in terms of some of the more urgent conversations that are happening now as well, which is whether or not it is gender equality or issues of racial equality or the future of the earth or whatever. And all of our collections are actually, we are able to mobilize those collections to talk about those issues. So in principle, I think that for me, those are the ways in which these kinds of institutions can work. And also, and finally probably, is just simply to be able to, I know that empathy is a word that is not very, very popular these days after that book. Recent book, but at the same time, I think that it is important for us to try and understand each other, whatever that is, and these institutions can do some things to do that. So those are the ways that I sketch the role of these institutions in a way.
Yeah. And also, I think why we said yes to the idea of working here.
Yes, tell me.
No, because it's exactly that. Because I think it's not entirely helpless. It's not meaning that because exactly this, like this look to history, this look to cultural identity, is not something that is based on empty rhetorics, but it's something that is really looked at based on objects and materials. And And that kind of give the limitation as well as the kind of like resources for like speaking based on what you have, instead of, you know, coming up again with all this feelings and emotions that may not be, yeah, of course, it's important, but may not be the answer for everything. And yeah, time-wise, I have to stop the conversation.
Will the audience ask anything? Do you want that? For me?
I think because we will have a panel for a longer discussion later on.
Okay.
But thank you very much, Raymondis, for your time, and thank you everyone for listening. Nuraini, Julia Suki, Fiki, Eolai, Ferry Taib, and the rest of Brigitta Isabella, Sanfia Dudina, sign off from Radio Kunci, and we will see you. You will hear us in 1 hour from now. Thank you very much.
Energy, artist, disco, copy, astrolog, access, business, Radio Kunci.
Thank you, everyone. We will be back here at 1.
We will
for the first
the
panel.
The audio
with
guide.
On listening
okay.
With
yeah.
Adam Bobel, Caroline Wittall, Wendelin van Oldenburg. The panel
you
will
can
be moderated by Cynthia
to the podcast
see
or
in 1 hour.
To the full audio guide.
Okay.
Yeah, we are hoping you try out to hear the audio guide if you want,
okay.
Since we have 1 hour.
They are not ready.
You are ready yet. Okay. Thank you.
60 minutes.
You know
so if you prefer to listen to audio guide instead of lunch, you can do that. What you have to do is open radio.kunci.org.id and you'll see the map and the instruction also in the paper. So you can test it out and we will be around if you have any technical difficulties. Thank you.
Saints, deductive, activis, energy, artis, disco, copy, astronaut, axis, physis, radio, conti.
The recording was created as part of Kunchi Research Residency at Drapan Museum under Heterotropics 2. Heterotropics is a long-term research and curatorial project initiated by Amsterdam-based curator Sarah Giannini and organized in collaboration with the art platform TAAK. Unfolding through different chapters and collaborations, it investigates the immaterial and material remnants of colonial desire in the city of Amsterdam. Heterotropics 2 is realized with the kind support of the Research Center for Material Culture, Amsterdam's Fonds for de Kunst, and Prins Bernhard Kulturfonds.